This message comes from NPR sponsor Sony Pictures Classics, presenting Wicked Little Letters, a new comedy starring Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley based on an outrageously true scandal. Wicked Little Letters is now playing only in theaters. This message comes from NPR sponsor Smartwool. Smartwool makes merino wool socks and apparel designed to keep you comfortable. Because comfort doesn't just get people out there, it keeps them out there. So you can do all the things you love outside all day long. Outside has never felt so good. Take 15% off your first order on smartwool.com. Smartwool. Go far. Feel good.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Catherine Hahn is an actor. She's been in comedy films like Step Brothers, the Anchorman movies, many more. On TV, she's starred in the NBC show Crossing Jordan. She was also on Parks and Rec. She played Jennifer Barclay, the political consultant. She played a rabbi on the TV show Transparent. She starred in her own HBO drama called Mrs. Fletcher. I guess what I'm saying is she has range. And here's an example. She has an amazing supporting role on WandaVision, the bonkers new show on Disney+. I'm not going to spend a ton of time explaining the plot of WandaVision. It's set in the Marvel Universe. Sometimes requires some prior knowledge. It stars Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany as Wanda Maximoff and Vision, respectively. The two of them are superheroes who have settled down in a New Jersey suburb where, wouldn't you know it, not everything is what it seems. Catherine Hahn plays their neighbor Agnes, who's also hiding some secrets. The show has really taken off lately, thanks in part to a very fun meme where Catherine Hahn winks. Anyway, when she and I talked in 2017, she just starred in I Love Dick, a TV show based on the Chris Kraus book of the same name. Catherine plays Chris, a New Yorker who moves to Marfa, Texas with her husband, who's played by Griffin Dunne. There she meets Dick, played by Kevin Bacon. Dick is an artist. He runs an institute in town. He's also condescending and withholding. Nevertheless, Catherine's character becomes infatuated with him and starts writing him letters. Here's a clip from the show. In the scene from the first episode, the two have just met for the first time at an art reception.
Hi, I'm Chris Kraus.
Well, hello, Chris Kraus.
Dick, right?
That's me.
I've heard a lot about you, Dick. Love that you just go by Dick, because usually someone would, you know, if one is born a Richard, they would Rich, Rick, Richie, Ricky. There's so many.
Just Dick.
Is it possible that I saw you on a horse yesterday?
Yeah, I have a ranch just outside of town.
Oh. How big? Curious.
You want to know how big my ranch is? No more polite to ask a rancher the size of his acreage than to ask a lady her age.
Duly noted.
Catherine Hahn, welcome to Bullseye. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I have been interviewing people for a long time, and I've interviewed many, many writers and filmmakers in entertainment. And the thing that I most am terrified of hearing is this thing that you hear all too often, which is, as far as I'm concerned, which is like, at the end of the day, I'm just a storyteller. And I feel like when I have read or heard an interview with Jill Soloway, the creator of I Love Dick, what you hear instead is like, no, I am not just a storyteller. Here is the ideological framework of the ethos that drives this entire operation. Mm-hmm. And that is amazing to me and a totally refreshing joy.
Yes.
However, I wonder what it's like for you as an actor who has this much narrower and more specific job of portraying a character.
Yes, that is an awesome question, because it definitely did come up. I knew going into it that I'd never heard of the book before that it's based on, the I Love Dick by Chris Kraus. But obviously there is a lot of, you know, it's lauded as a feminist cult classic. It's inspired so many women. It's an incredible book itself. So I also knew that she wanted to explore the female gaze, who gets to talk and why, which is a quote from the book. There was a lot of big politicizing around this. So you're right. As an actor, my job, like as Chris Krauss had said, when she was writing the letters to the actual Dick, when she, you know, back when this was written, you know, she calls it autofiction. Back when she was writing these actual letters to this actual man named Dick, she wasn't thinking of it as a feminist book. You know what I mean? She just had an urge to put her thoughts to paper. And so in the same way for this, I had to really like just ferret into this kind of myopic tunnel that was, you know, it felt like this pinprick light at the very end of it was Dick. This cowboy image played by, you know, Kevin Bacon in our show. So yeah, that was the only, I couldn't, if I stepped outside of it, there was too much of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Also, I didn't want there to be, and I don't think any of us wanted there to be any kind of halo around this, character. That I just, you know, the thing that attracted me most to the material is that it was just, she was so without apologies, so without shame. So troublesome, totally contradictory and maddening, you know, hilarious, so messy, all the like delicious stuff as an actor, something to chew on. And so I just didn't want to, you know, I don't think any of us wanted to like put her in any sort of pedestal in any way because it would have detracted from like the guts of it for sure.
Have you ever had any kind of corollary experience or any experience that you drew on when you were thinking about or preparing for this to your character on this show's interest in / obsession with, sort of odd specific obsession with Dick? Like, have you ever been that into somebody?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you start back at the very beginning and you think, oh, I wrote a diary. You know what I mean? Like, what was that need to have an addressee to put all of my most intimate thoughts? You know what I mean? Whose diary? I would certainly say I had a big old crush on Jesus when I was in Catholic school. I'm not going to lie to you. And that we put that into the show. But he was like,
there's some sex Jesus in the show.
He definitely was food for thought for my, I was in love. I mean, I've had, you know, it's so intense. Wore a little bride outfit when I got, you know, for my first communion, you know, got married. So yeah, that was a big one for me growing up for sure. And yeah, there is just like, it is, it's just an interesting, you know, there is something about like that looking for not only just respect, but, you know, to feel attractive, to feel looked at and get that kind of approval from, in my case, as a cis, you know, white, straight woman. From you know, whatever Dick means in quotes around it, then yeah, of course, many times.
I feel like I've read Jill Soloway talking about the reaction that she had, that many people she knew had to reading the book, which was, I want to go out and make things, and I want to go out and do adult activities. And I don't know.
When you say adult activities, I imagine shuffleboard.
You're just like, what, tax returns?
Right, exactly.
No, I'm talking about romantic
yes.
activities. So
fine.
I think that one of the things that Jill Soloway's work has often focused on is reversing the male gaze, and part of that is about or asserting the female gaze. And part of that is about the simple fact that, you know, women are taught to experience sexuality culturally as their own sexuality as something that is almost received.
Right. Yes.
And so that your character, Chris, is able to just assert her, like have a sexuality that is about her choice and her looking outward, is a big deal. And that is deeply tied in with the idea of the assertion that one is an artist and not mm-hmm. just the subject of art.
Yeah. Yeah. She is demanding to Yeah, she's to drive her own narrative. Also, but, you know, and she's a complicated character, which I love about it, too, is that, again, talking about the halo, like, she's dismissive of other women's work. Like, she's petty. She's really jealous. Like, she's, I mean, she's a total complicated, awesome mess. And that's also what I love about Jill's work. What I've always loved about it is that she has an ability to step outside and just kind of a little bit make fun of pretense or any kind of, if preciousness starts to, like, sink in at all. She has a way of diffusing it, which is always, like, I really appreciate. Because this is pretty heady stuff.
I want to talk to you for a minute about what is special about your relationship with Jill Soloway. Because, you know, besides the fact that she gave you the lead in a movie, An Afternoon Delight, and obviously values what you do well, what is different about the actual process of being on Jill Soloway's set, whether it's television or movies, from being on the set of, you know, NBC sitcom or a broad comedy movie or any of the other many things that you've done?
Well, I've certainly had, like, many fulfilling creative experiences as an actor. But there is something about this world, because this is now my third rodeo with her. For the most part, it's the same core crew since Afternoon Delight. Same DP, this man, Jimmy Frohna, who's unbelievable. He's, like, in family at this point. And, you know, he's so instrumental to the making of the thing. I can't even describe it. And for the most part, the same editors kind of work on all of them. And so they know exactly what they're looking for and what to kind of mine. It's different because there isn't a division of, like, cast and crew. I can't describe it. Like, usually you'll start something in a normal set and you'll rehearse it. Crew will come in and throw down marks, and then they'll give it to the crew to light and then give it back to the cast. So that there's this weird kind of, like, energy shift between the cast and the crew as the day goes on. And in this, it kind of, everyone starts on the same kind of democratic playing field. It just feels like the great equalizer. And so everyone, you start the day feeling like you've set an intention of what we're all going to make together. It's the same, like, I come from the theater, and so it just feels like common sense, like, you know, the circus feeling. Like, we couldn't, you know, if we weren't there for the guys setting up the tent, we would, you know, we couldn't do it. The show couldn't go. So we all know that we're in it together. And that kind of, like, putting on a show in a barn feeling, for some reason, the stakes go away from it. And you feel like you're completely without fear. I don't know if that makes sense at all. Like, you just feel like it's such a creative safety net. You don't feel like someone with a stopwatch freaking out, wringing their hands together, panicking that we're not getting something. Like, you don't ever start a scene thinking, oh, I'm going to get it wrong, ever. Like, you just start and you find it.
We've got more of my interview with Kathryn Hahn. Stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk about how, after years of feeling all kinds of guilt, she finally figured out how to overcome her shame. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg, host of Ask Me Another. I love film, food, TV, and clothes. So I was thrilled to talk with clothing designer, restaurateur, and fresh off the boat series creator Eddie Huang about his debut film, Boogie, and play a game with him. Listen now to the Ask Me Another podcast from NPR.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, host of the JV Club podcast. Ah, high school. Was it a time of adventure, romance, and discovery?
Class of 95, we did it!
Or a time of angst, disappointment, and confusion?
We're all tied together by 4 years of trauma at this place, but enjoy adulthood, I guess.
The truth is, it was both. So join me on the JV Club podcast, where I invite some great friends like Kristen Bell, Angela Kinsey, Oscar Nunez, Neil Patrick Harris, and Keegan Michael Key to talk about high school, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
My teenage mood swings are getting harder to manage.
The JV Club. Find it on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Kathryn Hahn. She's an actor who's appeared on TV shows like Parks and Recreation, Transparent, Crossing Jordan, and in movies like Step Brothers and the drama Private Life. These days, you can catch her on the wildly popular new show WandaVision, where she performs alongside Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, and the great Fred Malamud.
When Catherine Hahn and I talked in 2017, she was starring opposite Kevin Bacon in the TV drama I Love Dick. Let's get back into it. I want to play another clip from I Love Dick. And this is also from the pilot episode. And Chris, my guest Catherine Hahn's character, is having dinner with her husband and with Dick. And they've just gotten to the restaurant. He was already sitting there. And Dick is, as we listen, about to pull out a chair for Chris. And Chris is not unlike me right now, distinctly inarticulate.
Hello.
Hi.
Found it.
Yes.
At long last.
The only one. Oh, thank you. Wow, see, this is a real gentleman. Don't you dare yank this out, make me fall on my ass.
I'm sorry.
That's just a dumb joke. Oh, wow. Here we go.
They only have a tasting menu tonight. Hope you're okay with rabbit.
Oh, great. I love rabbit. I'm a big game eater.
I've never seen her eat game in my life.
Well, I'm not big game eater. I'm a big little game eater. Like, I love Cornish hens.
That's pretty much as big as the comedy gets in the show.
Yes. I don't know. There's a couple of other.
Are you aware of sort of modulating your comic tone and comic instincts? You've done so much great work doing big comedy. And you've also done a lot of work as a serious dramatic actress. And this is really on the edge of those things.
Yeah, it's a different gas on the pedal, for sure. I'm about to go start Bad Moms 2, and that's obviously going to be like a different amount of gas. but yeah, so this also just felt, because the stakes were so, I don't know, it's like sometimes you know when something's funny and sometimes you don't, and or you're not aware until afterwards of how it is, how it was caught, I guess, by the camera. And so that happened a lot in this series for me, that I sometimes feel like I'm pretty in control of laughs. But in this one, it was like, oh, like I was out of control of some of the laughs in a good way, I think. But
did you think you were funny when you started acting?
I knew I was a class clown for sure. And I think it was like I grew up in a house full of boys. And I think that was like, you know, it was fart joke city, USA. That was just like how we, you know, like talk to each other. But I think I went to school not thinking I was going to be I didn't do sketch. I didn't do improv or anything like that. I thought I was, you know, I was always the class clown, I guess. But I didn't go into it wanting to be a comedian.
Did you have any of that same reaction working on this that people sometimes describe, or reading the book that people sometimes describe having when they read I Love Dick?
For sure. I mean, I had never heard of I Love Dick before Jill, you know, had suggested it. And I couldn't believe I hadn't heard about it before. Couldn't put it down. I think Jill has described it this way, and I feel really similar. Like, you just put it down and you're like, you just feel inspired. You just want to make something. You just really want to make something. And it's just, that's an exciting, it just felt really bombastic. It felt like, it just felt so punk in the way that it was like, here's this woman that is unapologetic. She is without shame. She's so contradictory. She's so maddening. Like, you really want to like read the book through like, you know, your fingers at certain points. It's so cringy, which is like kind of how I love my comedy anyway. And so bombastic and so loud and so vulnerable. Then there's a power in how like raw it is and how vulnerable it is that there is, it's impossible not to feel kind of galvanized by it. It's also just feels somewhat radical that the book I'm talking about, like, it just feels somewhat radical that it was out of this like really embarrassing set of circumstances, like the failure of her film and, you know, kind of being the wife of a Holocaust scholar, like being financially dependent, just like not like just through these horrible, embarrassing embers of this like horrible failure, that she is able to use that as her like source of inspiration. And it's like, you know, she's not pretending she doesn't not own it. Which I think also feels really good. And there is a lot. I think it's a really human thing. It's like, you know, failure, that it's through that like horrible abject failure that you find sometimes there's the embers burning in that you have to have it.
Are you yourself a shameless or a shameful person?
Oh, I'm recovering Catholic, so I'm for sure shameful.
Of what are you shameful?
I mean, I'm just one of those peeps that at the end of the night, I'm like, oh, God, I used to be much more concerned with how it was perceived. Or you know what I mean? Like, and just as I've become older, I've just certainly become a mother, and I've certainly got, you know, a big case of the screw-its for sure. It just is less or less important. Like, what becomes more important? Because I just wish that I had read this when I was 20 years ago, because it does release you from the good girl idea, you know, whatever that means. For sure, I spent a lot of time trying to be something that I wasn't, or as I've tried to describe it before, I think I've like pretending to be normal instead of just like letting our own individual freak flags fly. It's like that there's actually some that I, you know, wish I hadn't been trying so hard to meet some sort of totally unachievable like expectation that I put on myself for sure, but also like societal, like, you know, that your worth is how you're viewed attractive wise, all that crap that like you just realize is such nonsense and put on us from something else.
Can I ask you about being a parent?
Yeah.
You have two kids, mm-hmm. right? Two kids?
Two kids, yeah. 7 and 10.
And I know, because my wife does a podcast about parenting, mm-hmm. that especially for mothers, it's easy to lose your sense of self in parenting,
mm-hmm.
or it can be. And that seems to me like a related theme to the themes of I Love Dick, to assert your own identity in the context of a family and in the context of a world where, you know, sometimes the world is defining you and sometimes you are defining yourself in relationship to someone else, which is to say your kids. And I wonder if you ever felt that way about being a parent, that you lose yourself in your kids.
Certainly early on, for sure. Like you can't see clearly. I would like have these I remember having like phantom, these nightmares where I would just like wake up and clutch at my chest because I had thought that I was holding my son and he had just fallen off the bed. And he was like, no, you know, he was in his co-sleeper, totally fine. But yeah, it feels like a limb, like a phantom limb. Or I don't even know if your wife remembers this, but I really do remember having like phantom baby feelings after they were born, both of them, still feeling like I'd feel them in my tummy kicking around. It's a trip. I feel like my creative life, sorry, I'm stuttering because I'm trying to word it, but I feel like, weirdly enough, like my whole self creatively kind of, I didn't feel like I was like really bringing my whole self to the table creatively until after I had kids. And maybe it's also because that's when I hooked up with Jill Soloway. And we started working together, and she saw something in me that no other director really had given me that chance to do before. But I certainly feel like creatively it's been I am so much the richer for it, and I don't know why. Like, I'm still trying to, like, connect those dots, because it does feel like I'm grateful. And I feel like I'm like lucky enough to have an outlet for a lot of those feelings, where I know a lot of women don't. You know what I mean? Like I know that those feelings have to go somewhere. And so I can also understand, like, and have a deep empathy for people that lose them, that all that energy goes into the child because they don't have another outlet for it. And so I get it from all sides. It's also like a really quick amount of time, which I didn't anticipate. I mean, I don't know if your wife feels this, but that you're actually like, I don't know. they're 7 and 10. And the thing that they never tell you that I was really surprised by is that they just need you more and more every year. Like, I always thought the hard part was going to be the real, real beginnings. And then, like, once we laid the foundation, but it turns out they just need you more and more. I'm so, like, it is constant mourning for me that of, like, missing the day that just happened. Because it's, like, you're, like, instantly nostalgic for, like, yesterday. Because it goes so fast. Like, I remember specifically, like, spooning my little boy when he was, like, 3 and being, like, oh, God, I don't have that much more of these. And now that's, like, you know, now he's, like, can you close the door? I'm going to take a shower. I'm, like, oh, okay. Totally understandable, but also like, oh my God, that just happened. Oh, yay, yay. Anyway, I don't know if that answered your question in any way, but yes, of course you can lose your, yes, of course. But I also think even if you didn't have children, like, and that was not in your cards either because you just, for whatever the reason, you're a woman without children, which is, you know, I think that there is like, that there is something about us, you know, a reckoning of a certain age of just looking back and being like, for any of us, you know, it's also just like being in the 40s.
Can we talk for a minute about you being a kid, borderline romantically in love with Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
Can you describe the circumstances, I guess?
Sure. I mean, it's also, you know, Jill's used a bunch, of, you know, of course, because it's the Jill and the writers. This is something that we mined for the show as well for Chris Krause, because we all found it like, you know, very compelling. And there's so many, like, I can't remember the name of that nun. There's like a famous nun that wrote basically love letters. Yeah, no, I think it was just because he was like, you know, really cute. And he all... He was really kind. He had like decent eyes. I mean, I remember going to a sleepover party when I was third grade. And there was like, you know, I went to the school that was like pretty culturally Catholic, if I can describe it that way. Like it was kind of the cheapest private education, but it was also culturally like important to my family because that was like socially the network that they had. So they knew, everybody knew each other, and it was, but, you know, we went to mass every week, and it was like a, you know, when I was confirmed, I went through all of it. But in third grade, I went to a sleepover at my friend's house, and there were a couple girls that we didn't know that were friends of the birthday girl from like another, you know, from her preschool or something. And these two girls were really, really, really deeply religious, and they couldn't go to bed without praying, like the two of them side by side, like on their knees, praying very deeply. And I went up and I like pretended to be as deep into it as they were because it looked so romantic. Like they were just so I was like, you know, hands together, like look, like really furrowed brow, just like really talking to Jesus, like not really knowing what was going on, but just knowing that I was really into that amount of passion and that amount of passion and that amount of faith, like was pretty intense to me, even though like half of me was kind of like my knees hurt.
Catherine Hahn, I'm so grateful to you for coming on the show. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, my God. This was really, really fun. Thank you.
Catherine Hahn, she's on WandaVision on Disney+. You should also watch basically everything else she has ever done. She is always great in everything. Here's a fun fact. Did you see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse? You should have. It totally ruled. And she played Dr. Octopus. Catherine Hahn, folks. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created in the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California, where we were grateful to welcome roughly 2.5 hours of heavy rain. Thank you, Sky, for that. We needed it. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer is Kevin Ferguson. Jesus Ambrosio and Jordan Cowling are our associate producers. We have help from Casey O'Brien. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is by The Go Team. Thanks very much to them and to their label Memphis Industries for sharing it. You can also keep up with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. We post all of our interviews there, and I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing. Visit your local REI co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways to opt outside. This message comes from NPR sponsor VCU Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center, who, as an NCI-designated comprehensive cancer center in the country's top 4%, is unconditionally committed to keeping loved ones in their lives. MasseyCancerCenter.org/comprehensive.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.